Welcome to Learn Something New Every Day. I am Joan Boyko, Coordinator of Communications and Community Outreach for the Palm Springs Unified School District. We are here each Sunday at 6:30 a.m. on 99.1 FM KGX and 9 a.m. on 92.3 FM KWXY. We also invite you and to download and subscribe to our podcast. It's really easy. All you have to do is go to iTunes, look for You Learn Something New, press subscribe, and you will get a new show each Sunday afternoon. This show, of course, is produced by my extremely dedicated team of student interns here in the Digital Arts Technology Academy, also known as DATA, at Cathedral City High School, under the direction of Mr. Bryce Johnson. And Janet's on the board today. Hello. Welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. Hello.
Enjoying your summer?
Yes.
Thank you for being here. Really appreciate it. And Marlene's in the room assisting as well and doesn't have her mic turned on. But hi, Marlene. Thanks for being here. And I am very pleased to welcome to our show today very, very special guest. Guest that we couldn't do what we do without her, and that's our Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Sandra Lyon. Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad Thanks to be for here. Being here. Yes. So I think this is the third time around.
Yes, it is.
And because you're finishing up, you just finished up 3 years.
I know, it's gone by so quickly.
Right? It really has. It's kind of, it's strange because yeah, I remember having you on shortly after you got here.
And I know.
It's really been kind of a whirlwind.
It has been.
For those who are unfamiliar with you, though, give us a little background. How'd you get here?
Well, I came here directly from Santa Monica, Malibu, where I was the superintendent for 5 years. Right before that, I was the chief leadership officer for Palmdale Elementary School. I almost said Palm Springs. and that was a wonderful job. I supervised 26 principals. And up until then, I just kind of did the sort of traditional educational route. I was a classroom teacher, site administrator at the district office. I did take a couple of years to be a consultant, and that was actually how I got introduced to Palm Springs. I was a consultant who did some training here with staff over a number of years and always looked fondly on that time and remembered the staff, and I loved the desert, so it was always in the back of my mind, like, that would be a great place to be, and my husband even had said it when I was consulting here. And then I was also a superintendent principal of a small district in the northern part of LA County where I lived for many years. So I've been really grateful and appreciative of the experience that I've had because I've been able to work K-12 as a teacher and administrator, and so have in rural and urban, wealthy and high poverty districts. So I've pretty much seen it all.
I just recently, and not that I didn't know the story, I knew the story, but I got to hear details recently when we took our interns to lunch about that you didn't actually plan on being an educator, kind of. No, I wouldn't say fell into it, because I think it was always around you. You have a sister who was an educator.
I do, but I think that was why I didn't want to be an educator. She's 12 and a half years older than I am, so when I was in junior high, she was really, you know, kind of getting her first job. And she cried every day for 3 weeks. And I thought, who does that? Why would you want to teach if you're going to cry for the first 3 weeks of every semester? And she retired as a teacher. So, I mean, it ended up being fine. But I remember as a kid thinking, I will never do that. So I do tell young people, never say never.
That's right. But you were a journalist.
I was. That was really what I always wanted to do. I still love to write, and I write a lot. And it was a great experience, but I worked for a Time magazine, and they closed down the San Francisco Bureau at the time for a short period of restructuring. And rather than move to New York, I took a job as a marketing person writing for a hospital in San Francisco. And my boss had been a former Time magazine person as well. And I loved it, but I started tutoring teenage mothers who at their classroom below my office, and I loved that. And the teacher there finally said, you know, you need to go back and get your credential. And that's what I did, and it's over 30 years plus in education, so it was a wise change in path, and I've never looked back.
Well, and we're very glad you did that.
Thank you.
We're the beneficiaries, and I say we, it's the students and the staff, Palm Springs Unified. What are the priorities of the Board of Education and intern, you and our administration?
Well, our board is really clear on their priorities. They really want to make sure that we attract and retain a highly qualified staff across the district. They want to improve achievement for all of our students. Right now, we're still primarily tested in math and English language arts, although we're going to be adding some other content areas, but that's been our big focus. They want to make sure that our English learners are ensuring that they're also achieving at a high level, as well as our identified student groups that we really need to continue to increase. And then they also have some other goals. They really want to expand our opportunity to create biliterate students across the district and really work on our early childhood education. So they have a number of initiatives that they're very focused on. But really, at the end of the day, we're all focused on student outcomes. Are we doing the best thing we can for every student so that he or she can achieve their full potential? And I think in a nutshell, that's what we're working at every day, all day, and that's what is important to the board and the community.
So what would you say we're doing really well?
I think one of the things that we've been working on for these past 3 years, I'll say the first thing is really addressing the concept of equity. When I first started, one of the conversations I had with the Board of Education was that they really wanted us to not continue to give everything equally across the district, but really focus on the diverse needs and the different needs that some of our communities and schools and students have. And so I think the equity conversation is something that it's still being had, obviously, statewide and countrywide, and I say that in Palm Springs Unified, it's definitely something people are thinking about and looking through that lens now in a way that maybe 3 years ago it wasn't on everybody's lips the way that it is today. So I'm really proud of that. We still have a lot of work to do because equal always seems to feel better,
right?
And it's hard sometimes to make that decision about why somebody else needs something different in order to achieve.
Well, and not that it was the word and the concept were never used before,
right?
You came.
Oh yeah.
However, it was not, it really wasn't a district goal or mission, or it was just sort of
right
around.
And I think that's why the board had asked me to really focus on it.
And I remember, you know, first time hearing about it and starting to feel what that really means, it's like, wow, you know, that really does make a whole lot of sense. And it doesn't make sense to just give everything to everyone,
right,
when sometimes they don't need it.
Right.
They need different things. And I think it's a difficult concept for a lot of kids, staff, parents to embrace, because it's not usually the way it's done.
Right.
Like, everybody's equal.
Yep.
Well, not everybody needs the same things at the same time.
Right. You know, and I worked with I will call him an equity warrior, Dr. Pedro Noguera, and he always uses the example that as parents, we know that each of our children need different things to address their behavior, to help them improve, to just work with their, you know, personality, their learning style, who they are. And yet when we go into a classroom, we somehow think that doing one thing for all students is going to impact all of them at the same level. And so we know it intuitively as parents, and yet don't always apply it then to our students who cross the threshold of our room. So I think that's an interesting thing for us to remember, is we do know that. It's just hard, you know, and our teachers work extremely hard. And having been a longtime classroom teacher, and my husband just retired a year ago as a teacher, I know how hard it is to think about that differentiation and thinking about how, if I'm a secondary teacher and I have 150, 180 student contacts a day, how do I differentiate? And so we've been really working on our professional development to help teachers have strategies to do that.
And that's, well, Matt, and see, from, I guess, from when you work at the district level, I'm looking at it more as site-wide, mm-hmm, kind of resources or equipment or programs. Like, for example, we have elementary school counselors at all of our schools in Desert Hot Springs and, mm-hmm, a couple of other schools as well, but that's not across the whole district. Mm-hmm. There's a need for, mm-hmm, our little ones in Desert Hot Springs to have a school counselor. So I looked at it that way. It's even harder though when you look at it at the, mm-hmm,
at the
classroom level. But that's so important and true, because
right,
not two of your kids are the same.
No, that's exactly right.
Wow. That is really
that's when it becomes more daunting.
Yeah,
that's when you think of it.
And that's why I'm just so grateful I'm not a teacher. I've said that before. Here's another reason, because that would be really hard. I don't know if I could sleep at night. You know, am I doing
you
the
know,
right
when I was
thing
a classroom
for all
teacher,
my kids?
That was one of the big challenges. Sometimes you didn't sleep as well because you knew that, you know, that lecture that you did hit 80% of the kids, but you had 20% of the kids that needed something else to help them access that. And how was I going to provide that in the next day? Because the train doesn't slow down, so you can do that. You've got to keep everything else moving while you're sort of juggling. And I think, you know, we're working to provide the kind of PD that teachers can see how to set up classroom structures that allow them to do it. Because we don't want people to work harder. We want them to work smarter and do the things that really are meaningful and impactful for student learning. I also think that we haven't made enough adjustments yet in the classroom and in our school system to address the new approaches that kids have to learning and what they need to learn. And we often don't ask kids enough, what works for you? What doesn't work for you? And so I think we're trying to do that more as well and realize that, you know, the old days of lecturing and standing in front of the room and if you got it, you did, and if you didn't, too bad. The world is different. We're still hung up in, we still test kids in a way that I think in 10 or 20 years, it's going to look very different. But we do know that our kids have access to information at their fingertips. What they need to be able to do is apply and problem solve. And that is a messier, noisier, different kind of classroom than a classroom where you're just trying to take in some information and regurgitate some facts.
Well, when we went to school, all the desks were in a row, and they were usually those desks that were, at least at elementary school, connected and had a little thing underneath where you could put your books, and they were all in rows, and everything was tidy, and the teacher stood in front of the classroom, and you basically listened and raised your hand to answer a question, and the classrooms are not looking like that anymore, you know, once in a while, but you go into classrooms, and they have creative furniture, and they have, and kids, some kids have these headsets on, and the technology is just, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, right.
But the kids, they're not wired the way we were. I mean, because they you know, by a year, they have their parents' iPhone in their hand.
That's right.
And they're playing with it in there. So they're already, like, by the time they get to school, they're already using all of these different senses, and you know, they'd be bored in that kind of setting.
Well, and I think that's a challenge, and you know, there's a lot of studies, research I should say, out there right now about the impact of technology on the developing brain, and I do think we have to be really cautious as we proceed, because kids shouldn't be on devices too much, because there is actually some concern about how those neural pathways are being developed. And I do think our kids, and you know, I got my credential over 30 years ago at San Francisco State, and I had a professor then who talked about the changing brain and the changing attention span, and that kids really couldn't attend for more than 2 to 3 minutes. I remember that, you know, and yet I would go observe teachers and they were lecturing for 30.
Right.
So I think we've known a lot about the brain and how the brain learns. We just struggle to make the kinds of shifts that will really impact students and their ability to learn.
And that's kind of a lot of pressure on our educators, because they have to evolve with the technology and
they
constantly
do.
Be learning.
Well, you know,
how to do it.
My husband's kind of a classic example. He started out as a business teacher teaching typing, which actually I do believe we ought to teach more, because kids still tell me that I remember the typing and I wish I typed faster, because in every setting you're at a computer and you
That's
need
right.
to be able to move around that keyboard. Mm-hmm. But he started out there and he ended up teaching multimedia and web design, because that was really the evolution. We didn't teach 6 periods of typing anymore. We needed kids to be able to do more. So,
was he excited about it, or was he?
He was. He loved it.
No,
you know,
that's
he
great.
Really did. But I think that is one of the challenges, is that, you know, the brain loves a pattern, as I always say, and so it's really hard to deviate from that pattern. And so, if what I've always done is have you read the textbook, answer the questions at the end, go over it with you, and review it, and give you the test, it's really hard to then have you read independently, pull from that some key points, and now give you a problem to solve and to write a scenario or write a play or create a project based on that. And so that's what we need people to we need to give teachers more support because, you know, as a longtime teacher with kids raising a family, there aren't extra hours in the day where you can go do that reflective thinking and plan. And so we want to help our educators, and I think we're doing a better job of that, giving them time during the day to plan and work together and think about how they can better meet the student needs of the 21st century. We're well into it now,
right,
and yet we haven't quite evolved in the way that we need to.
Absolutely. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Learn Something New Every Day on KGX and KWXY. And our very special guest is our superintendent of schools, Dr. Sandra Lyon. And Sandy, what would you say are some of the biggest challenges in general in education today and specifically for our kids?
Well, we've talked a little bit about them. I think that continuing to evolve in our approach to pedagogy and how we're delivering instruction is one. We're behind in the dollars. You know, I think if you look at what we receive as an educational system across the state of California, we're the fifth largest economy in the world. And yet in California, we continue to rank 41st, 43rd, 48th, depending on which measure you're looking at in student funding, student expenditures. And so that's not okay. It means that our students in California, which are identified over and over again as having more needs than students in other states, are not getting at all what they need in terms of those resources to exceed the level of expectation that we have across the country.
So when you say they have more needs, you're talking about economics? You're talking about
language? Economics, language. You know, we have large English learner population. We need to do things differently for those students so that they can truly become biliterate adults. We need to make sure that socially and emotionally we have a high poverty rate in California. So are we meeting those needs as well for our students as they come in? So I think we have a number of factors and variables in California that we know are different. Not too long ago, the Getting Down to Facts 2 report came out, which is a set of quite a few studies that have been done by researchers nationwide to look at what's working in California and what's not. And what they continue to say is we are underfunded. And so it's really hard to explain that to the public because they really, and I always said as a principal, you know, one of our challenges was at the site level, and it's true at the district level, we continue to do well with less. And so it's hard for people to understand that we really don't have the resources. But the ratio of counselors to students, the ratio of administrators and teachers is far greater in California than it is in other states that continue to be very high achieving. So it's something that I just wish we could do better with the messaging because we tend to really struggle with people understanding that.
Well, what's the reason? Is the reason that we have legislators who don't see the value of education? Is it because our tax money is not going to the right places? I mean, why is it that the state of New York and
that's probably one of the biggest hot potatoes in the state of California, but I will say it's Prop 13. And so, you know, I was in California in public education pre-Prop 13, and it was a different landscape. So in those states that have more funding and have greater achievement, they have a very consistent revenue stream. And if you've been in California long enough, you know that since we're not relying on property taxes, we are relying so much on personal income. That varies year to year. That can vary really greatly during a recession. So during those difficult times in California, the floor kind of falls out. And so, you know, it takes us years then to recover. I mean, right now we have the highest revenue that we've had in, you know, over a decade, and yet we still haven't received the amount of money that gets us back to those 2006 dollars. So it's hard for people to understand because they say, well, you're getting more money now than we have. But if we'd have stayed on that track, we would be far exceeding our revenue right now and better able to do things for students. And so I hear that from staff and from parents, class sizes, we need more administrators, we need more counselors. And, you know, nobody's going to dispute that, but the resources just aren't there to do that.
In New York, we used to, well, not I was a kid, but my parents voted for the local school budget every year.
Right.
And
well, and every state does it a little bit differently. Yeah.
So they felt like they had a say in what
Right.
You know,
Massachusetts is the same. So you have your township that also has a vote. So you have more of that resident.
And I'm sure
base.
You're only approving, again, I was a kid, but it's only the local school budget and not what's coming in from the rest of the state.
That's right.
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 Yeah. It's just when I came to California, it was kind of foreign to me. That
right.
There's nobody here has any say. We have say on bond measures.
We do, but not on actually that
no.
revenue coming from California. And that's why it's so important to engage with your local legislator and let them know what your concerns are. And we're very fortunate that we've been able to meet with our legislators, all of our elected officials every year. We've had our legislative breakfast, and it's our opportunity to remind them of that and that those dollars are really important. And, you know, right now we're in the budget cycle. Pretty soon, both the Senate and the Assembly will work to make sure that Newsom looks at the changes they want to see in the budget and that we hope he signs. But this process, which I'm glad now it has to be done by June 30th. You know, when I was in education years ago, we'd wait sometimes until the fall to get a budget, so at least we get one sooner now. But the decision about how that pie gets carved up is what's really happens, you know, sort of between January and the end of June. And so having people know, let me advocate with my local legislator for full funding for pre-K-12 education does make a difference. They do listen to that, so it's really important.
And it's hard when you know, one year you have more money, and then you say, great, you know, where and everybody says, okay, great, give everybody raises, add all these programs, and then what happens in a year or two that you don't have that money anymore,
right?
And you have to go through a cutting process. And we've been very fortunate in our district that we have leadership and a board of education that understands that and doesn't just
right.
You know, take
well, and it's also the variables that help you not have to make those kinds of cuts. So one of the things is during the last downturn in Palm Springs, the enrollment was growing. So it didn't affect Palm Springs in the same way that it did other districts in the state who, in addition to the downturn, were declining enrollment. And that was a devastating couple of variables to come together. Our challenge in Palm Springs Unified right now is that we are in declining enrollment. And so it isn't going to be the same reality for us as we move forward. If students don't come in, we are going to have to tighten our belts. We're going to be looking at some cost-saving measures. And one of the challenges is, as superintendent and somebody who believes passionately in public education and the importance that it has in making sure we have an educated electorate who makes good decisions for now and the future, is that we want educators to be well paid. We want them to have benefits. We want education to be a profession that is the choice of our top, best, and brightest students versus something else, because those kids have a lot of options and we want them to choose education so that they can help us make our system even better. And I think that when we can't pay as well and we don't have benefits that we're able to sustain, then we lose that attraction.
Right.
So I'm very cognizant of that. We try very hard to make sure that, and that's again, as I said earlier, a board priority, that we are making it attractive for young people and people from who are experienced in other districts to come to our district. But we have to do it in a very mindful way, a cautious way, so that we don't get ourselves into a situation down the road that isn't sustainable.
We must be on the right track, because I recently heard that we typically bring in at least 100 new teachers every year, and this year maybe we're only going to have 40 or 50. And the reason for that is that people aren't leaving.
Yeah, which is a great thing, and that is what we
want. Our kids are leaving, but the teachers
right.
are not.
So a little bit of that is that we don't have the growth, so we don't
right.
need to recruit in the same
True.
Ways that we have when we have more kids coming in. But yes, we are having a little bit more stability, and that's what we want. We want people to stay with us for time.
And I understand that, because this is a great place to
it
work.
It is a great place to work. And to live.
And to live.
Yep.
So we're about a week and a half away from the start of the 2019-20 school year. And so what's new and exciting?
Well, I always think every year
yeah.
is new and exciting. It's one of the wonderful things about being in education. You get to start fresh. I really think that for us, a lot of it is about deeper. So, you know, the new and exciting is we get a new year to really revitalize our professional learning communities, which really are the bread and butter, I think, of student improvement and student achievement. So we're going to continue with that work. We're continuing with our equity work. We also have two big committees, initiatives that we're working on this year that I think are going to be very important for our students. One is around middle school. Our middle schools aren't achieving at the level that we know they can be, and it's not just a one school issue. It is kind of a district-wide issue, and having been a middle school teacher and a middle school principal, I know how critical that time period is for kids and the developmental piece that's happening then. So we're going to bring a group of folks together to really talk about what do we want to agree upon, what do we want to do across our district to make middle school exciting and engaging and really help people and help our kids really develop that passion for learning and finding out who they are and what they want to do in the future. So that's going to be exciting. And then the other one is around student behavior, relationship building. I hear that from students when I go out and talk to them at the high schools, that they really want their teachers to know who they are, to see them and hear them. And I know that's the case all the way through. We have students who struggle sometimes to comport to the behavior we need in a classroom to educate them. So we're going to convene a pretty large group of elementary, middle, and high school folks to talk about that and what is our expectation, because it's not just about what the students bring to the classroom or to the school site. It's also what are we bringing as adults, and how do we create the environment that then gets us the results that we're looking for. So I'm excited about both of those initiatives. I think they're going to really help us get deeper across the district, and it won't just be me saying here's what we need to do. It's really going to be that collective development of understanding and setting of expectations, and I think that's going to be powerful.
That's great. And just reminded everybody, we started with the last school year breakfast and lunch and supper
for
all students.
Right.
Because of the demographics of our district.
We're serving more meals now.
Yes.
So that's really exciting. So kids are accessing that.
But
that's happening.
You still have to fill out paperwork for accountability and for our funding that the district gets. But it's not about income levels.
No.
Everyone gets free food.
Yep.
So keep that in mind.
And that's going to continue.
We've had the most robust summer we've ever had in terms of summer feeding.
Right. And I think adjusting the hours and looking at doing it a little later in the day in our parks where we're doing the summer feeding is really helpful.
All right. So to wrap it up.
Already?
Can you believe it?
No.
Hopefully it's not anytime soon. But I'm making the leap that you will likely retire from Palm Springs Unified. You're
wow,
not going to go anywhere else.
Cool.
I said hopefully not in
right,
the near future.
Right.
We want you to stay another 10, 15 years. That'd be great. But when you leave either Palm Springs Unified or wherever if you happen to go somewhere else, that's not happening. But anyway, what would you like to have be your legacy?
I think I know what I would like my legacy to be is that Palm Springs Unified continues on the trajectory that it is right now, and that it is used and exemplified as an example of what can happen when we truly believe every child can achieve and learn at high levels, that we're the school district that they point to and say, Palm Springs Unified was able to defy the odds. They defied demographics. Demographics did not prove destiny. It actually was that whoever crossed the threshold of those classrooms achieved at a high level, and that we are looked to for closing achievement gaps and for having no behavior problems because we've created these engaging learning environments. We have the support of the community, that we are really the shining star of what can happen when everybody works together to benefit students. And we're on that path.
Yep.
We're not where we want to be yet, but I really do think we can become that district that everybody comes to visit to see what it is that you need to put in place to make that happen for your students.
Amen to that. I think that that's a very
it's doable.
It is doable,
but it's aspirational as well.
Exactly, that was the word I was looking for. But it's both,
I
think that that's a great goal. And who benefits from that? But our kids,
and they're the ones we're doing it for.
So, and finally, parents and parental involvement.
Yes,
we've put a lot of resources into family engagement in the last few years, especially.
Mm.
How important is that?
Super important, and I think harder than ever. And so we're going to continue on that. We have a wonderful family engagement center, and we have a wonderful coordinator, Ruby Rivera, who does amazing things. We have an APAC, we have our district DLAC, we have our special ed parent group. So we're just going to continue to work with them to help outreach. But if you're a parent and you're listening, get involved at your local school, get involved in the district. We need you.
Thank you, Sandy.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for everything that you do. Next week, our guest will be my monthly co-host, our arts coordinator, Louisa Castrodel, along with a program associate from the Children's Discovery Museum of the Desert. Our show airs each Sunday right here on KWXY and KGX, and our podcast is uploaded each Sunday afternoon. Please subscribe by going to iTunes. Look for You Learn Something New. Press subscribe. Please tell all your friends to do the same. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Janet and Marlene, and we will see you next week.